If you're like us, you spend a lot of time thinking about the 1996 movie Jerry Maguire.
Oh, true classic.
Yeah, I've never actually seen that movie.
A true classic. But as much as we love that movie, there's the scene that is, at first glance, really boring.
Oh yeah, I think everyone is going to know where you're going with this. Boring.
It's the one where Renee Zellweger is driving. Tom Cruise is in the passenger seat, and Renee Zellweger's son is in the back seat.
And that little kid won't shut up.
Jerry, do you know the human head weighs 8 pounds? Do you know bees and dogs can smell fear? Do you know that my next door neighbor has 3 rabbits?
Oh my gosh, it's like nails on a chalkboard.
Boring. Shut your yap, kid. I'm trying to watch Tom and Renee fall in love.
Wow. Okay, guys, 3 things. First, you're heartless. Second, I haven't seen that movie, but I'm pretty sure that scene was universally beloved. And third, what does this have to do with Wisconsin politics?
Well, setting aside the point that you're wrong, by the end of the movie, that kid is beloved. The audience realizes, hey, this kid sounds kind of boring, but he grows on you. The rest of his scenes are even interesting.
So we should do a podcast about stuff that sounds kind of boring, but is actually pretty interesting and important. You in?
Well, I completely reject your premise. You had me at hello.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson.
I'm Laurel White.
And I'm John K. Wilson. Time for a podcast roundtable on stuff that sounds boring but is actually interesting.
All right, I'll start this thing off. Let's talk about something that is secretly very interesting. Transferring money from the general fund to the transportation fund. Boom.
No, dude. No.
If I had a mic right now, I would drop it.
You do, but it's on a sedan.
That's true.
So it's essentially a bank transfer, a budget transfer.
Whoa.
So we're clicking just, some money into a different column.
Like Robin Voss is Venmoing money into joint finances there, split-wise.
Okay. Obviously, I'm going to have to set this up with some background so you appreciate how interesting this is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the general fund, it gets its money from income taxes and sales taxes. Now you're with me.
Yeah.
Whereas the transportation fund gets its money from gas taxes and vehicle registration fees. So transportation fund's not really getting any bigger, right?
All because of the stop on gas tax indexing. Ooh. And the refusal of the governor to accept any new revenue from gas taxes or fees.
Somebody's been listening to WPR's transportation series.
You mean that 5-part series you worked painstakingly on for months?
Yeah, that's the one.
Shameless plug.
So WPR.org/roads. So just to set this up a little bit more, back in the days of Democratic Governor Jim Doyle, he was running out of money in the general fund for stuff he wanted to pay for. So when we say general fund, we're talking about schools. We're talking about the University of Wisconsin. We're talking about prisons.
Which is a school.
Thank you, mister. We're talking about prisons. We're talking about healthcare. Okay. So the general fund is all of these things. And Doyle wanted to put more money in there than he had. So he was taking money from the transportation fund, putting it in the general fund. And Republicans would say, he's raiding the fund. He's raiding the transportation fund. And this was like a rally cry for them for years. He's raiding the fund. And so now they've gone the other way. They've taken this money from the general fund, put it in the transportation fund over and over and over again, so that if you actually look back over the last 14 years, more money has gone from the general fund to the transportation fund, about $560 million more. And Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald are talking about doing potentially more, making a permanent cut of the income or the sales tax go into paying for transportation. Do I have you yet? Are you like on the edge of your seat? What do I need to do?
Yes.
I can give you more.
Because I guess, you know, for the sake of being a little skeptical here, like you just said that they've been doing this for a long time. So I guess what's interesting now is they're going to make it permanent?
What's interesting to me is a couple things. I actually didn't realize that more money had gone the other way. I had heard this idea that we were raiding the transportation fund for so many years. And they messaged it so well
but really
that Wisconsin actually passed a constitutional amendment to ban raids of the transportation fund. So Wisconsin has locked down that fund. You can't take money out of the transportation fund anymore.
But it's actually been getting bigger by taking money from...
You can pull money into it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, though. Like, let's say a future governor and legislature looks at this long-term trend and says, you know, we need to repay the general fund all that money that we took out of it to pay for roads. Can't do it anymore. It's like a one-way valve, right? Money flows into the transportation fund, but it don't come out.
So there's a constitutional amendment that says you can't pull money from
it was for
you're
effect.
Just, you're yeah,
trying to
you're
get
just
the
like
kids
getting,
interested
yeah,
into I, general fund transfers.
the GFT.
By talking about one-way valves.
One-way valves.
nothing gets teenagers interested like one-way valves.
This is the homeowner coming out in me.
Just imagine you're pumping up a basketball, kids.
I have a question, though. So there's a constitutional amendment that says you can't transfer money out of the transportation fund.
Yeah.
Even though less money has been transferred out of the transportation fund than has been transferred out of the general fund?
Yeah. It's a pretty good messaging, huh? The road builders and their allies in the legislature talked about raids so much that they got this constitutional amendment to lock down that fund. And now money cometh into the fund, but it doth not go...
Are we getting into Game of Thrones here or something?
I'm trying any reference. So I think fundamentally what it means is if you keep doing this, and especially if you make it permanent, like Speaker Voss alluded to, it's very early in budget negotiations, and I don't think they're there yet, but they've both hinted like, yeah, we might want to do this, and you could make it permanent. What you're talking about doing is for years or decades siphoning away money that was going to go to schools to pay for roads because they don't want to
raise taxes.
Take tough votes to either cut projects or raise taxes.
So what happens then to the increases that the governor has been touting to the schools budget in this budget cycle? If you transfer money out of the general fund, does that like negate the increase that he's proposing for education?
Very good question, and it's very possible. I mean, there's only so much money in that general fund. The governor leaves it with a ending balance. Now I got you hooked. Ending balance is $87 million, okay, which is like nothing in a
budget.
30-plus billion dollar general fund budget.
That
76
can run the state
billion.
Government for like a day and a half. Is
Boom.
That correct?
Boom, very good. That's how you get people interested. Mm. Put it in terms that are like tangible. Yeah, if you start to take that general fund money and say, hey, we have a surplus here, let's pay for roads with that, so we don't have to deal with this gas tax increase and we don't have to cut road projects. The problem is you're taking away the centerpiece of Governor Walker's budget in a way.
Right, and you're going to have, I would guess, a lot of really upset stakeholders coming from like schools, corrections, mm-hmm. healthcare. I mean, there's a lot more interest groups in the general fund realm than there are in the transportation realm.
There are, although one interest group they've been willing to gonna go after in the past has been the university system.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that Senator Fitzgerald alluded to when he brought this up, that, you know, I've seen some troubling news about administrators at the UW, specifically UW Oshkosh. He was talking about a story there.
Have we heard anything from Walker about whether or not he's into this idea?
Well, we know he's into it because he's done it. You know, mm-hmm. You just look at these budgets. I was also surprised. This was interesting to me. Okay, which means it's probably I'm like a maybe not representative of
the general population.
It's possible. I was interested to see that actually Doyle, when he was quote raiding the transportation fund, was backfilling it with general fund money that he was borrowing from he was using the general fund to borrow, and he was taking that general fund money and put it in the transportation fund. So even when it was raiding the fund,
he was reimbursing it.
He was reimbursing it. He was driving up debt.
Within what time frame, though?
Like, it was like immediate. Yeah. So in 2003-04, the first time he did it, he raids the transportation fund by $680+ million.
So he was.
He borrows $560 million from using the general fund to backfill it, telling bond buyers basically, we guarantee this with the full faith and credit of the state of Wisconsin. So that he can use that money to pay for roads.
And so has it was
I
it
just,
under...
Here's why it's interesting to me. I feel like I was sort of in the haze all these years. And then I look at this Fiscal Bureau memo and I say, you know what? We have not been raiding the transportation fund. It's been going the other way.
Has it been more under the Walker years?
More than, under the Walker years,
that more
yeah.
money has been flowing back to transportation?
Yeah, when Doyle left, it was a net. I mean, he had definitely taken more out of transportation than he put back in. Not as bad as everybody talks about, but he had done that. When Walker came along, he actually included this permanent recurring appropriation. Mm-hmm. So every budget automatically sends stuff to the transportation fund out of the general fund. And they may do that again, given the inability to reach consensus on like a gas tax or vehicle registration fee increase.
All right.
You can't see it right now, but John and Laurel are like, they're just like fanning
themselves. We're fawning over how interesting and exciting this is.
I'll admit that seems slightly interesting, but I don't think that it's a sign of things to come with other boring stuff that you're going to talk about.
I mean, yeah, you're probably going to have a hard time topping that because that's like jaw-dropping news. Laurel, what you got?
Well,
what you got?
So I have the really enticingly named Project Labor Agreements.
You don't say.
Yeah. Also known as PLAs on the street.
Playas?
Plas.
On the street.
On the street.
I should have used that.
Yeah, you should. It would fit yours perhaps a little bit better. So basically what these things are is they're agreements that contracting businesses reach with the workers on projects, and they set like working conditions and whether certain groups are employed on the project, like veterans or minority communities, other things like that.
This is like if a town wants to like build a skate park for children or something.
Right. So yeah, let's start from there. So like if a town wants to build a skate park for children, they put out an RFP, a request for proposals, for contractors to say like, this is how much this is going to cost and whatever. And basically what this bill that just passed yesterday and is now headed to the governor's desk, the bill says that local governments can't require in those proposals that companies include these project labor agreements. So they submit the proposal for like how much the project is going to cost and stuff, and they don't have to have these PLAs inside the proposal.
So they can't build parks anymore?
They can still build parks.
How does it affect me?
It affects
whatever.
You.
I want to go shred in the bowls, man.
All right, so
shred
like,
in the bowls.
You still get your park, but some people would argue that the skate park could crumble beneath you, just
because it
shatter
wasn't
because it wasn't built with union labor. That's the argument, that projects that are not union projects might be less well constructed. And people are also saying that, you know, it could hurt working conditions and employment of, you know, certain minority communities, veterans, things like that. So that's kind of the back and forth. It's the argument. But I think what's interesting, particularly interesting about this, even though I tell you're already super into it.
Yeah.
You're already super into it.
You know what I think we're the whole stick here is that two of us are supposed to be bored while the other person explains it. And I can tell you from having been on the hot seat, it hurt when you guys didn't care about the general fund, man.
But legitimately, what is interesting about this? Please believe me.
I'm going to go leave and watch paint dry. I'll be right back.
I mean, so who out there, like in Radio Land, thought that like Act 10 was interesting? Podcast Land, Podcast-topia.
Oh yeah, Act 10.
Act 10.
Now that was interesting.
Right, Right to Work.
That's pretty
other,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah, like legislation that affects public sector, like unions in the state, and this a lot of people are arguing is yet another step in trying to weaken the unions in Wisconsin.
I mean, not that I care. Right. Obviously, but what are some of the arguments in favor of doing this? What are people who are backing this saying will be? How will it affect my skate park in their estimation?
It's so funny because I just had this like reaction. I was like, "Well, I'm not even going to tell you."
All right,
I don't care.
Podcast over.
Over. So what supporters are saying is that this will basically level the playing field between union and non-union contractors. So they want everybody to be able to submit bids, even if they don't have union workers, if they don't have the things that would meet these requirements. So they're saying that it's pro-business, it's pro-market, it kind of lets the market work things out. And they really reiterate, you know, if a local government wants to pick the contract that has the PLA in it, the proposal that has the PLA in it, they can do that. It doesn't say you have to pick the lowest priced or the whatever. So they're arguing that the freedom is there. It's just removing the ability of local governments to require these things.
And I mean, again, I would probably rather rub sand in my eyes than listen to anything more about this subject. I feel like I have to ask, how common are these PLAs now? I mean, how many of these are they trying to stamp out?
So that's the other thing that people who, like, said they didn't support this legislation. Opponents, that's the word, opponents to the legislation.
Concise.
Yes, thank you. The people who said that they did not like it so much.
Legislation bad.
Right, exactly. They said that the PLAs really, they're not that incredibly common. So what's the big deal? Why do we need to, like, say that you can't have them if they're not used that often anyway? And when they are used, they're effective. That was their argument. So I'm guessing I have not personally done an analysis to see how many have been utilized by local governments. But in the debate on this bill, opponents to the bill said PLAs are not very common.
What was that quote from Representative Amanda Stuck? That I thought was interesting as far as legislative slams go.
Oh, man.
I doubt it was interesting.
That was intense. Yeah, I mean, if you're, like, into that kind of thing. She was on the floor yesterday. They were debating this bill in the Assembly. It passed the Senate last month, and they were debating it last night. And I guess her husband is a journeyman. And so she basically said, like, you folks here in the legislature don't understand what it's like to put in a hard day's work, and you have soft hands and round bellies.
Yeah. There is a rule in the legislature that you're not supposed to get personal when in these debates. And I personally love it when they get personal because, oh, that's a better story, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, it's like she was, like, pointing to specific people, like, the round belly.
Yeah,
more of, like, the, you know.
But I know, but for a female legislator to tell.
The representative from New Berlin is looking rotund. Not naming names.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have. I mean, you've been around for much longer than I have, but I don't think it happens all that often where somebody just kind of, like, throws down. With soft bellies.
Well, didn't somebody flip somebody else off last session?
Yeah, that did happen last year.
Yeah, that did. So then, in the name of bipartisanship, that was Representative Bob Gannon who flipped off Democrat Peter Burka. So yeah, it happens. Wow, we've covered a lot of ground, guys. Do we have room for more? I mean, I don't know if my heart can handle another secretly exciting topic.
I mean, I really have nothing else to do. I'm probably going to go sit under my desk after this and cry. And I'd rather do that, frankly. But I guess if we have to talk about another subject, then lay it on me.
Why are you sitting under your desk and crying?
Do we need to talk? Everything okay?
This is actually his daily work routine.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, 12 o'clock, time for a good cry.
That's in a movie. I can't remember what movie that is, but somebody, like, schedules their daily cry.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was a documentary.
It's Holly Hunter, I think. It's some movie with Holly Hunter. She schedules her crying anyway.
All right, guys. Quarterly census of employment and wages.
Oh, you mean the gold standard numbers?
Yeah. The gold standard numbers.
You're sounding too interested. You sound interested already.
Because when you say gold standard, I really don't care.
What? So we had a couple sets of job numbers come out. Three sets of job numbers come out this week, really. Okay.
And really?
They told different stories, kind of. So we'll start with the one that came out most recently. Came out Thursday. This is the monthly job numbers that we're all used to. They showed, based on a survey of Wisconsin households, Wisconsin's unemployment rate went down to 3.9%. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
Who's surveying these people?
Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Ooh.
Separate survey that comes out at the same time of employers showed that the number of jobs was basically flat. And that is the stuff that gets a lot of play, especially from the governor these days. Of course, he's going to highlight the 3.9% unemployment rate. It's good. But this gold standard number, which is actually, as the name implies, it's a census, basically, of all employers. Takes a long time to put together, but you get 96% of employers.
And who's putting that one together?
That is the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Again?
So it's sort of like they have, their name is Statistics. Little snapshot,
yeah,
which is like, what, like a small percentage?
Yeah, it's a survey. I mean, yeah. You can actually think of it like surveys, and then think of the QCEW, the Quarterly Census of Employment and Wages. Think of that as like Election Day, okay? That's the actual number.
Yeah.
These surveys along the way that happen every month, that's a small group of people and
like
a small group of employees. It's like a poll,
like
exactly.
Like a poll of 1,000 totally. People versus poll, everybody voting.
And a poll with a very high margin of error. And the poll we've seen very wrong in Wisconsin a number of times. But it gives you the best quick snapshot of where things are. The gold standard shows you where things really are. They just come out so much later. So this this gold standard survey covered September of 2015 to September of 2016.
And so they're calling up businesses and saying, who did you hire between September 2015 and 2016?
It's based on their unemployment insurance records. I mean, it's based on hard records. And so it showed a couple things. One, Wisconsin's 32nd in the nation in private sector job growth. That is kind of par for where the state has been. Sort of in the middle of other Midwest states, always behind the nation in private sector job growth. I mean, that's, you can bank on it. The other thing that was kind of interesting in this survey was that Wisconsin lost 4,000 manufacturing jobs over that span.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's interesting to me because it basically challenges what I hear all the time, you know, that manufacturing is growing. I mean, when I go see... it's usually the governor, but if I go see a politician make an announcement at a business, it's going to very often be a manufacturing business because we like this idea that we make things here. And boy, the policy in Wisconsin in recent years has been geared to helping manufacturers. So to find out that, like, even as the economy is still growing, and it is, we're starting to lose manufacturing jobs. You know, at a time that we're spending as a state $300 million a year roughly on corporate and income tax breaks for manufacturers, and the state is shedding manufacturing jobs, that to me is pretty interesting.
How does this number compare to what we've seen previously about job losses in manufacturing?
So as you can imagine, I mean, Wisconsin used to be a heavier manufacturing state, as a lot of Rust Belt states were. The Great Recession was really bad for manufacturing. Lost a lot of jobs here. In 2010, Governor Doyle's last year started to gain jobs again. The state has added manufacturing jobs in almost every year that Governor Walker has been in office. There was one year where they went down slightly, but it's almost every year we've added manufacturing jobs. Added 4,000 the same period a year earlier. So September 2014 to September 2015.
So we're at a net zero then? If 14-15 was up 4,000 and 15-16 is down 4,000.
You've hit a point, and in talking to an economist from Michigan who tracks this stuff pretty closely, and he says you're just at this point in the economic cycle where this happens. Nobody should be surprised by it. This is what happens. Manufacturers get more efficient. They can do more stuff with fewer people through automation. And so if you're looking at manufacturing for jobs and adding jobs, you're looking in the wrong place. And in Wisconsin's case, you know, we've made this sizable investment in manufacturing.
How big is 4,000? Like how many people?
It's like in terms of the percentage decline, 0.85%, I think, roughly, 0.83, something like that. Percent decline. So not huge in terms of percentage drop, but it's a noticeable actual drop in, you know,
especially when they're doing all these boring things like trying to encourage manufacturing in the state and spending lots and lots of money and energy in doing those boring things.
Yeah, lots of money. Yeah, I mean, when other state government, other programs that receive state government funding are told we don't have enough, and manufacturing is getting $300 million, manufacturers are getting $300 million a year. That's a pretty interesting stat to me. Are you guys interested? Huh?
Yawn.
That's all I got. That's it.
So boring.
Wasted that however long this ends up being of my life.
Sean Johnson is WPR's boring Capitol Bureau chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol reporter.
And John K. Wilson is...
He's like, just a nerd.
Just a nerd.
Thanks, guys.
You can subscribe to a whole bunch of incredibly interesting episodes on iTunes. You can also rate and review the show there. We are on Google Play and a bunch of other podcatching apps. And as always, you can find all of our past episodes at wpr.org/politics.